Watch what happens. Watch what happens. Who cares what happens when there's so much that happens?
Happens.
To talk to other Crappens listeners about the shows as they air, come over to facebook.com/watchwhatcrappens.
And to follow us on social media, go to watchwhatcrappens.com to find all our social media links.
And for our bonus episodes and all of our extras, come over and be a premium member over at patreon.com/watchwhatcrappens. That's patreon.com/watchwhatcrappens.
Hey everyone, welcome to Watch What Crappens, a podcast about all that crap on Bravo that we just love to talk about. I'm Ben Madelker from bsideblog.com and The Banter Blender, and joining me, as usual, is the wonderful and hilarious Ronnie Karam from trashtalktv.com and the Rose Brooks Bachelor Podcast and Real Housewives of Beverly Hills Audiobooks. Hey, Ronnie.
Well, hello, Ben. Why'd you get all quiet? You were all hyper before this started, and then it started, and you got all NPR. What the hell?
I didn't want to waste any time. I wanted to get right into this madness of today. Because the truth is, I'm about to waste your time right now. I wanted to tee you up to think that it was going to be, I was going to have nothing to talk about, but I have things to talk about. First of all, Happy New Year to our Chinese friends and our Vietnamese friends. Second of all, it's National Croissant Day, Lisa Rinna, so you know what we're expecting. Croissants. This is true, it's National Croissant Day.
I have a question about the Chinese New Year. Is cashew chicken going to be updated anytime soon? Because I feel like every year it's the same model, which I love, but I could use a new model.
Yeah. Maybe this might be, you know, everything's changing these days. So maybe this is the year that cashew chicken, you know, switches it up. We can only
dream.
And
what else?
So I learned about National Croissant Day because last Wednesday, after we were done recording for the week for our Watcher Crappens 5th anniversary week, I actually was invited to a dinner at Curtis Stone's restaurant in Hollywood called Gwen. Curtis Stone, who we all remember, was a judge on Top Chef Masters. That's the Bravo tie-in there. That's why I'm bringing it in. It was a dinner to celebrate, I think,
the host or something of that show.
He was the host and judge of Top Chef Masters. And then he was also host of that sort of like Amazing Race cooking show on Bravo.
He used to give dirty looks to people. He'd be like, welcome. That was not good. Dirty look, dirty look. I remember he hated fat girls. I love that show.
It was, I forget the name of the Amazing Race one, but it was like Last Plate Served or something like that. So they had this event at his restaurant, Gwyn, for Australia Day. Australia Day was sometime last week. And so this was sponsored by, I think it was called Good Day Australia. I forget the organization. Sorry. But it was really cool. It was an event to celebrate Australian wine and all this stuff. And so I was invited, and it was a totally comp meal, which I think I have to say, otherwise it's like illegal. But it was really cool to finally try some of Curtis Stone's cooking. For those of you who don't live in LA, he had opened up a restaurant about a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago, named Maud in Beverly Hills. That's been like a really tough ticket to get into, and it's been really acclaimed. So it was sort of cool to hear that a TV chef actually had a worthwhile restaurant, and Gwen is his second restaurant here in LA. It's more of like a meat-centric restaurant, and it was really good, Ronnie. It was really, really good.
I'd love to open a meat-centric restaurant named after a woman. So was Maud the woman's name, or was it M-O-D?
No, it's M-A-U-D-E. I forget the backstory. I think it's
B.
named
Arthur.
I think it's named after B. Arthur. I think
this will be the first abortion in a restaurant in honor of Maud.
I forget the backstory. I think Maud and Gwen are either his daughters or his sisters or, you know, mom, something like that. But
on his headboard.
But I actually have the menu for those of you who are, since we are going to be talking about Top Chef and Real Housewives of Atlanta today. I thought this was the reason why I'm bringing it up today is I felt like this would be a good thematic tie-in. So I know people who tune in on our Monday show are, to some extent, culinarily interested in things. So let me tell you about what the menu was at Mod, because they gave it to us with his little autograph, by the way. Yeah. I've got Curtis Stone's autograph in front of me. So it started off with like a charcuterie.
Oh, really, are you flirting with me?
A little charcuterie. And I'm not even going through everything that was on there, but the charcuterie was really tasty. And there was something, there was these little pretzel bread buns. If you wind up going to the restaurant, definitely get the pretzel bread buns. Those were delicious. And something, I'm going to misspell it, mispronounce it, finocchiona. Have you heard of that?
Mm-mm.
It was some sort of spread that you
it's
put
so
on
new,
the pretzel bread.
It's making up for the... the age of the pretzel bun.
Yeah. It's like a spread that was like a meaty spread. I'm like the worst food. And I was sitting at this table with like a producer from like Good Eats, you know, on KCRW, and someone else from KCRW, someone from CBS. And I'm like the idiot there that's like, now what do you call this stuff here? Then the next course was a beef tartare. What are your thoughts on beef tartare? Do you like beef tartare?
No, I feel like some things should be cooked. Okay. I mean, I'm not freaked out about everything, you know, I'm not like sushi, ew, but, beef. Yeah. I mean, I've been friendly with cows and they need to be cooked. There's a lot of germs there.
That being said, this was delicious. This was delicious, delicious beef tartare. And it came with a focaccia. And I'm telling you people, this focaccia was to die for. I feel like it was some of the best focaccia I've ever had. You know how focaccia is like dimpled on top? You could see pools of butter in all the dimples. Oof, girl. Anyway, then there was toothfish and lamb and pavlovas and stuff like that. It was all delicious. So highly recommended. If you're coming into town, if you live here, definitely check out Gwen. Good Day USA is the sponsor. It's on here. Definitely check it out. It's going to be expensive, but it's worth checking out. For the very least, to be able to say you tried Curtis Stone's cooking, right?
Yeah, sounds delicious. I made tortillas, and then I binged on them. And then I was like, why do I feel so sick? I've only eaten homemade food. But it was like half of a box of flour, so that's why. Well, so there you go. Know. I hope you enjoyed your fat-shaming Curtis Stone food while I was getting fatter at my house.
When I entered it into MyFitnessPal, I just wrote in mistake and just automatically gave it like 2,500 calories. I was like, I don't know how many calories this is. I'm not going to go through every single item on here. I'm just going to say one big mistake.
Yeah. What do they call that? What do Catholics call it when they hit themselves with like beads?
Like self-flagellation?
Yeah. I'm not going to do that.
I was flagellating.
Although that would have burned calories. It's the good thing about self-flagellation. It's a lot of like reaching to your back.
I know. Those shamed Catholics are in such good shape from their self-flagellating.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, there's a whole CrossFitness industry kind of built on that. They're always like, okay, pick up a chain and hit yourself in the back with it. Now run around the block with the tire on your neck.
Yeah, I mean, I think boot camps are a great, no pun intended, exercise in masochism. Because when I've done boot camps, I'm like, why am I here? And within 5 minutes, I'm like, why am I doing this to myself? Why did I? This is actually terrible. This is the main reason why I didn't go into the army is because I didn't want to go into boot camp. And here I am. This is it. What am I doing?
Well, I know what you're going to be doing. You're going to be recapping Top Chef right now.
That's right. Speaking of boot camps, let's get into some Top Chef from
last week.
Everyone's
got some Top Chef under their seat.
Now that I've filled everyone's brains with ideas of focaccia. Oh my God, is the donut guy outside again?
There's a donut guy outside? Who has a donut guy? Is that a thing? Is that like a truck?
No. My donut guy is someone who makes donuts with his cars in the intersection, as evident.
What? He actually does donuts.
Yeah, when
like
I was
the car move.
Like I actually caught him on Instagram, like about a week ago, and I have there's a video of him doing donuts outside my window. But just now, when I walked down to Starbucks to get my coffee to amp up for this podcast, he just full-on did a daytime donut, and there were, like, people in the intersection, there were cars waiting to go, and he was doing donuts, and I was like, this is madness. I was so mad I didn't get it.
Well, I'm glad I asked you what you meant before I ran out the house and scootered up to your house.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you thought, because I texted Ronnie, I said, there's a guy doing donuts in front of me, and you must have thought I was, there's someone making
donuts.
No,
I got it in that context, but we just talked about all this bread and food, and I was like, there's a donut guy outside? I should have known you'd still be looking at your window trying to find the damn donut guy who almost.
No, I heard a loud like muffler sound outside.
You're like, so I will get you, donut guy. You'll do this whole thing from your balcony, just waiting to see Donut Guy again.
I can't wait for Donut Guy to come back because I really want to videotape him and shame him.
I feel like we need a new name for that car move because it's so rude and donuts are so delicious.
They are.
Can't we just call it like the hemorrhoid cushion move and leave donuts alone?
small penis twirl?
Yes. Speaking of small penises, Casey. Just kidding. Chef. She doesn't have a penis, guys. She's that, Casey.
Well, it's so small, you can't even see it.
It's so small. I was going to say it's a clitoris, but I already know the danger of talking about lady parts on here because I don't really know. I need a diagram. So,
listen, everyone, we used up all our good stuff in the five-year anniversary week, okay? We're just, you know, we're still recovering. We're still recovering.
I do feel like I'm kind of recovering today.
Yeah.
I'm trying fresh. To think of a name for a clitoris. I mean, that's pretty sad.
I know a name for clitoris. Donut Man.
Is this how year six begins? Hey, I heard that Watch What Happens is having their 5th anniversary, too.
That's impossible.
I know, but didn't they come out before us?
Yes. It's not like we pioneered Watch What Happens. That's a lie.
Wouldn't that be amazing if people were on Twitter like, hey, remember when you stole their name 5 years ago? Watch What Happens.
I would love that. Trendsetters. So Top Chef. Quick fire this I know you probably want to talk about the stuff that happened at the very beginning of the episode, so you talk about that.
We do, because it was really good this time.
It was good.
It was really good this time. First it starts with Casey talking to John, and Casey's one of those people that tries to talk like she's really smart. I think she thinks if she says a lot of words that she'll sound smart, but she's never really saying anything. Have you noticed that? She comes back and she's telling John, well, first I thought, like, I don't know what to think. And then I thought, well, what should I think? And then I was like, well, surely we're not, you know what I mean? Because I was like, I'm thinking, and then John just starts, like, crying. And he's like, we failed as humans and as chefs on this challenge. And it hurts so bad that Katsuji hates me so much. Or he wants to win so bad that he would hurt me. His friend, he's a rat with zero integrity. And he starts going off. And then they cut to Casey. And Casey is still like, but then I was thinking, you know what? I really didn't know what I was thinking. So, oh, thanks for sounding off, Casey.
She sort of sounds like me when I'm grappling to say something. You know, it's just like, you know, I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say is, you know, let me rephrase it. It's more like, you know what I mean? It's like that.
But
it's actually that Fred Armisen
thing where
character.
She nods right in your face and like she'll put her hand on your shoulder and kind of squeeze it like I'm about to say something really, really important.
But first, I'd like you to validate that my scallop was in fact fresh. It was fresh. It was. I tasted it 5 times and I only had diarrhea for like 3 hours.
Well, John is trying to reword everything and make him sound like a huge victim, which he was kind of a victim. I mean, Katsuji did throw him under the bus.
But he was, but he knew that would happen. And second of all, he spent this entire episode acting like he just got back from Vietnam. I'm not saying that because it's Tet right now. I'm saying it because the entire time he was like, oh, I'm still recovering from Restaurant Wars. Wow, you know, I was almost brought to the brink in Restaurant Wars. Wow, old John almost came out in Restaurant Wars. I've been working on myself, but you know, Restaurant Wars. Like, John, you weren't in an actual war, okay? You were just
one of those people that wants a gold star for not hitting somebody that day.
Yeah.
Like, that's what the rest of us do every day. Okay, you don't get like an award for not killing somebody today.
He's like literally acting as if he were in platoon.
Like
he was there down on his knees, with his hands up in the sky as Katsuji flies off in a helicopter.
It's like, do you know what it was like being Tom Cruise and then returning as like the Tom Cruise from Born on the 4th of July? It's like, it's not easy. But I didn't hit anybody today. But the other chefs basically tell us the truth. Brooke, who never really says anything shitty about anybody, and you can tell they're asking her in the diary room, okay, well, what do you think about John? No, you have to say something. You literally have to say something, Brooke. No, I don't want to hear about blueberries. you have to talk some shit at some point. So she's like totally bored talking shit, but she's like, I mean, to me, since you're making me answer this question, it sounds like John played a big part in losing that challenge. So you know he's bad if Brooke's shit talking him, because she doesn't say anything bad about anybody.
No, she definitely does not. She barely even talks badly about Emily, and you know she wants to.
Yeah, you know it's so close. So they basically chill for a little while and go to the beach, and then we get to the guest or the quick fire challenge. It's... Okay, Michael Voltage. Is it Michael Voltaggio?
Michael Voltaggio, yeah.
Duckface. That twin, okay, did you notice how he keeps pouting his lips? He's like, with his lips, and he raises one eyebrow.
That's
like,
he raises
one eyebrow like Days of Our Lives. I know, but it's just, I guess because we haven't seen him so long, it looked crazy in this context. It's
like, yeah, I think he looked pretty much the same, except he has more tattoos. They're like creeping up like onto his face now.
Creeping. They're not creeping, they're taking over. He put a skull right on that part of his lower neck that attaches to your chest. Like, I'm so bad. I'm sorry. I'm stupid. But the part where in that smoking commercial where that lady has to cover the hole in her throat and be like, trachea. This is what happens from smoking. And then she puts a cigarette in there. He put a skull there. I mean, you're so deep, dude.
Yeah, well, you know, chefs, you know, hardcore, man.
He's like, this is my used to do heroin skull.
Yeah, pretty much. I would have been dead if it weren't for this skull. And this is a reminder that I would have been dead if it weren't for it.
Well, Duckface Voltaggio, all of those tattoos. I mean, I think Lena Dunham's vagina came back to life. I was like,
and then started crying and complaining.
By the way, we should mention.
Sorry, we should mention to people who are new to the podcast. Ronnie likes to call Emily Lena Dunham.
He looks just like her.
I just want to put that out there in case people are like, what? Lena Dunham.
She looks just like her, and she's obsessed with her own emotions like anybody cares. Yes. Like the real Lena Dunham as well.
And she has been spurned by Odell Beckham Jr.
You know she would be. And then she'd go home and cry about it later too. Like, I sat next to this guy and he didn't even look at me. Like, I'm nothing because I'm not traditionally dressed like a whore you would see in a pinup.
I mean, I made him like a maple butter cake and he like didn't even look at it. It's like, gosh, I mean, I know I'm a rookie, but you don't have to rub it in my face, Odell Beckham Jr. Like, that was actually the doorman. Oh.
Yeah.
Well, now I'm a racist. I get it. Fine.
She's the twitchy-eyed tomboy version of Eden from Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. She gave me nothing.
I touched her hand. She gave me nothing. Well, it was a mannequin. Yes, but I saw that movie. Mannequins can come to life.
Well, when Padma announced that this was a blindfold challenge, I think Lena Dunham's vagina started clapping. Like, I have a chance! It's like, he's not wearing the blindfold. You're wearing the blindfold.
That is funny. Yeah,
rude, but sorry, there was a blindfold opportunity, and I had to take it.
No, it was super funny. That was super funny. I really meant that sincerely. It sounded not sincere at all.
No, seriously, that was
seriously,
great.
So, anyway. Seriously, Ronnie, great effort. So this is actually one of my favorite challenges, although I think it's kind of like a bullshit challenge, but I enjoy it nonetheless. It's the blindfold taste test. And the rules are basically that they have to taste something. And once they have to identify it and to lock it in, you say next, or you can say pass. So Brooke starts off and she pretty much gets everything, except for clam. She says clam is oyster and she's like, oyster next. Oh, it was clam. And Padma's like, yes, it was.
She also misses duck, which I guess is normal, and balsamic, which was crazy. Hmm. Although she did realize she got got that one wrong after she let it settle or whatever. Yeah. But John starts this challenge off. He's like, well, wondering how the smokers are feeling right about now that it's all about your palate. I'm like, okay, snot face. You're last. You're like in last place. So shut up.
Yeah. Don't come for the smokers when Padma gives you cream cheese and you're like, I don't know, flour?
Yeah, like, exactly.
That's not even an issue of flavor. mean, that's like, how do you, even Padma, they cut to Padma's face, and she looked all screwed up. Like, she, probably the face she gives Gail every time she walks into a room. Like, what, really?
I know. Whenever she sees a new flower pattern on Gail, she makes this face. I wrote in bold, Padma's face. So yeah, we were on the same page.
Padma kept shaming everyone, by the way. Because every time someone would accidentally say pass, or like at one point someone identified it, but they didn't say next, she'd be like, oh, I wish you had said next. Or, oh, I wish you hadn't have said pass. It's like, thanks, Padma.
Yeah, she says it really slowly so they can never make up time. I like that John didn't even get pimento when he made that last week.
I know. Well, because his version of pimento tastes like, you know, rancid crab and cheese whiz, probably. Because that's what he served, apparently.
Well, Lena passed on everything. She's like, pass, 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 pass. And then they give her makeup mango, and she goes, fruit roll up.
They give her chicken. She's like, ugh! She just basically became, like, a five-year-old girl. It's gross.
Oh. So who won that one? I didn't write who won.
Brooke won it by a long shot. She got like 16 and everyone else got 12 or so, including Michael Voltaggio.
Yeah, Lena Dunham got like one.
Five. She got five.
Yeah, it was sad.
Yeah.
I felt bad for her. I don't know why I feel bad for her, because I feel like I should hate her. She's like a traditional Top Chef villain, but I'm like, aw.
I don't hate her either.
I don't want to hug you, but I don't want to lock you out either.
I don't hate her because I do feel like she's misunderstood, by us included. Like, I feel like she's someone who is frustrated in life all the time because she can't help herself. She doesn't know how to present herself in a way where she could be understood. And as a result, she keeps getting misunderstood. And then by being more misunderstood, she gets more flustered and gets more misunderstood.
I think that she's lost a ton of weight just because her, like, she looks, that. That's how I'm looking at it, because she has that kind of look to her. Like, I don't know, fatty. Uncomfortable. She looks like she's just lost a ton of weight. And I think that, as most people who lose a lot of weight think, life is going to change when you're thin. It's like, life is so much easier, thinner. And then you realize, oh, it still sucks. Yeah. I just wore smaller pants.
I don't think she has lost a lot of weight, because that would have been part of her backstory. We would have definitely seen pictures of before and afters. And, well, if it weren't for cooking, I never would have lost weight. Some bullshit like that. And she also probably would have been like a healthy chef, not serving up maple cake. Unless she was self-loathing, which is possible too.
Yeah, I don't know. But if anybody has any info, please send it my way. Because I'd love to know. I love to know diet stories, girl.
Either that, or maybe she's just a middle child.
Yes, who used to be fat. Okay, we're in agreement.
Who's misunderstood. she got five. I'm surprised John did not take this opportunity to talk about how being blindfolded, tasting things without being able to see, was brought him back to memories of Restaurant Wars and blindly going into the kitchen, not knowing if he would ever be able to make his nasty pimento cheese, what with Katsuji's three dishes he had to plate.
Yeah, he's all, wow, that was a tough challenge, but you know what? At the end of the day, I have to say, I'm proud of myself for not hitting somebody.
That was a tough quickfire, but at the end of the day, I'm proud that I still got through Restaurant Wars. Did I mention I was in Restaurant Wars and it was hard? Did I mention that? But I'm a new man?
So the next challenge, the elimination challenge, is a charity event for poor kids.
Yeah.
And everybody pays $500 a piece, and the winners get richer children or whatever. And the they have to talk about their happiest childhood memory. Yeah. And I was like, please don't start with Casey, because you know Casey's childhood memory is going to take forever and be about nothing. Like, I was never prouder of myself than that time that I first buttoned the coat. It filled my heart with I don't know what. I don't know. I don't remember. But it felt good. I'm like, thanks, Casey. Write a book.
Without that coat, I don't think I ever would have been the hot one on Top Chef.
That was when I realized it was up to me to make sure that I wasn't cold. And that was empowerment right there. Like, thanks, Casey.
I'm just glad that Jamie isn't on the show anymore, because his would have been like, my happiest childhood memory was being 6 years old and getting hooked on heroin. If it weren't for that heroin, I never would have gone into cooking. So what
when I realized I could tie off my own arm with one hand, I thought, well, I'm like fucking Superman.
My happiest childhood moment was hearing that there was an actual band named Tattoo. It was two lesbians from Russia. I thought, wow, someone named a band after my body.
I'm dedicating this dish for children to my child, who's a child. Because,
my favorite childhood memory was being an adult and having a child. Who's a vegetarian?
And possibly on heroin.
Oh, no. We're going to get the hate mail now. Don't make fun
children on heroin.
Don't make fun of children.
Could you imagine someone sitting in their car right now being totally pissed off that we're talking about children?
Yes, actually, I can.
How dare you, sir? There are children 6 years old on heroin.
People are really, they are feisty about children. I mean, understandably.
No one should feisty about children on heroin.
Well, people shouldn't make fun of kids. They really shouldn't. But people are also super sensitive of what they think is making fun of children. Just so you know. You have to tread carefully.
So, look, if your kid is listening to our podcast, he's advanced enough to get it.
Okay? And if he's not advanced enough, then that's on you. Oh, see, I'm making fun of children again.
Well, John's fondest memory is the smell of white wine. And I was like, oh, my God, we're like brothers. I didn't hit anybody today either.
I think he meant like a white person whining. He's like, that was a great moment when I heard that white person whining about restaurant wars as a child.
First person I ever punched. Well, he was talking about scampi, white wine, garlic, and lemon, or whatever.
Yeah.
So he wants some, you know, some crab, and he buys all the crab so no one else can get it. And Silva's all mad.
But Silva's version of being mad is really adorable. It's like, he took all the crab.
Okay. I am mad. I have to say,
I guess
say,
I get beef.
I am quite pissed off. It's like, you go, boy, you show him. So
this is how angry I was when someone burned down my restaurant.
Say it again.
This is how angry I was when someone burned down my restaurant.
This mad, screaming mad, piping hot mad. Can you feel it? I like when he was trying to come up with something else, and he's like, the ribeye was talking to me. And I'm like, it probably is, because you can't tell with Silva. He's probably like, what, ribeye?
Well, Silva sort of feels like the kind of guy who might be in a children's show. Like, hey, Mr. Ribeye is calling on the phone. Hi, Mr. Ribeye. And like a ribeye comes with googly eyes and a little mouth.
Hello,
oh,
Silva.
We need that Mr. Rogers energy to come back. Now, that was a children's show. Someone who didn't act like a spaz just to get attention of children. Children's shows now are like, hey, kids! They're all crazy. Mr. Rogers was like, hi, I'm sitting in my house in a sweater. People are like, wow, what a great show. He's the new Mr. Rogers.
No wonder why kids are on heroin these days. You know, if you watch Yo Gabba Gabba, you can go right to the juice.
It's like my sponsor from that time said, put on one shoe at a time.
It's like, no, that was Mr. Rogers. No wonder you never got off heroin.
My happiest childhood memory is when I figured out Blue's Clue. And the clue was heroin.
Sheldon is telling Brooke what he's going to make, and he's like, my dad loved to eat rice and tea out of his thermos. And Brooke's like, his thermos? He's like, yeah, his thermos. She's like, really, his thermos? And he's like, yeah, it was delicious. And she just starts laughing because he never gets it. This episode was a lot of
shade.
Brooke looking at people with accents like, what the fuck are you even talking about?
Yeah. Sheldon was like, I'm going to make tea and barley. I'm like, okay. And then Emily, Lena Dunham, she announces that she's going to make an icebox cake. And I'm excited for her because she did well in Restaurant Wars. Which she made a cake for that. So that was like her first like positive notice on something. So I was like, okay, she's going to follow that. And you know, an icebox cakes are delicious, you know, and they're hard to mess up. So anyway, she says she's going to elevate the icebox cake. And I'm like, this sounds good. Good for you, Emily. You're finally on the right track.
Well, her grandpa Gilbert was George Bush Senior. They showed a picture and I was like, oh my gosh, no wonder she's a wreck. And she's like, it's basically like layers of chocolate cookies with Cool Whip. And I thought, my God, she's going to literally do Cool Whip. Yeah. Like, this bitch is literally going to use Cool Whip. I just felt it coming. And I spot cakes. Of course, they're delicious. I mean, it's cake mix in a sheet pan. Like, of course it's good, but come on.
But I did say it was a little suspicious because Icebox cakes are also kind of like no bake. But I guess if she's going to bake her own cookies, you know, that would help.
Meanwhile, next to her, Brooke is making eggs Benedict sous vide in a crepe with herb oil. She's like, oh, nice. Icebox cake.
Yeah, that's nice. So what are you going to do after the first 30 minutes when you're done with it? So you're going to make cookies. Okay, I remember making those for bake sales as a child. That was my second childhood memory. So you're going to make cookies. Okay. Oh, and then you're going to whip some cream. Great. And then what else?
Nothing. That's literally it.
Oh, well, that's good. I'm sure you won't fuck that up. It's just cookies and cream.
My favorite part of this episode was this. Shirley.
Yes, I knew you were going to do
Sheldon's this. Sheldon's like, so, how about your childhood, Shirley? I don't know why they always give Sheldon the, now your turn to talk, because he's so awkward with it. But he's like, so, Shirley, what about your childhood? And she's like, oh, of course I was troublemaker. I climbed trees. I jump off buildings. I would cross street without looking both ways. My mom would say, Shirley, what are you doing? Sometimes I would run around the pool. Crazy. Because they say only walk around the pool. No running. I will run. Like, she just kept going for like 10 minutes. And Sheldon goes, I don't know what she's saying, but I'm awe of how much words are coming out of her mouth.
She was basically the prototype for Yo Gabba Gabba, by the way. Like, just jumping around doing childhood parkour. I used to swirl my stomach and tap my head at the same time, all day long.
All the time. I would go swimming, and I would go under the water and hold my breath. And then people would say, is Shirley dead? And then I wouldn't be dead. I was like, just kidding, Mom. Oh, I made her so mad.
I do jumping jacks for 5 hours straight.
She was a little cracked out.
Yeah, so, Shirley was making a what was she making?
She was making like a lamb.
Oh yeah, lamb. She made a lamb thing.
Tartare kind of thing.
A sliced lamb, of course. And then Casey, by the way, we should mention that. Well, I have a trashy grandmother and I have a fancy French grandmother. So I'm going to make a crab cake because she thought that was fancy, stupid bitch. And I'm putting it in some bread. I'm going to call that a macaron because of my other grandmother was French. I'm like, well, just because you put a crab cake in between two pieces of bread that are circular does not mean it's a macaron.
Yeah, macarons are very specific, okay? That is egg white and almond, like almond flour. Very specific.
It's very difficult to me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of us are watching the Great Baking Competition.
You can't just say it's a little round thing. And then when she said her macaron was going to be two pieces of white bread, I was mortified for her.
I did not get that. It felt to me like, of all the French fusion things she could have done, that was the laziest. I mean, hello, it's National Croissant Day. Make baby croissants.
Also, she didn't really make a crab cake. I think she was saying it because it was inside the bread. But it was basically like crab salad. Like if she was making tuna salad, it was like a mailed crab mixture inside white bread. I'm like, did you really just make a knockoff of a tuna sandwich?
I think she was trying to go back to the radish challenge when she made a radish look like a scallop. So she's like, look, I'm going to make this look like a macaron. Except the thing is, by the way, it also didn't look like a macaron. It would have been one thing if it was like a faux macaron.
It looked like
macaron.
A scallop, oddly enough.
It actually looked
it
like a
scallop. It ended up looking like a perfectly cooked scallop. Too.
Take a scoop of potato and sculpt it to look like a macaron, maybe. I don't know, but
or just make something that's not like a crab salad, because that's weird.
Or just like, don't call it a macaron.
And don't say what two pieces of white bread in your intro. Voltaggio was like, I'd fuck you, but I'm not gonna give you the win here.
She should have done. You know what she should have done? She should have done crab and put it like done a crab escargot situation and put like little crab things in an escargot plate with like that garlic butter, and would have been like a fusion of like, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. Eating something. Crab out of a snail's ass. I mean, it would have been better than this.
So yeah, that's what Casey worked on. And then Silva, he made basically like a little beef croquette, essentially, from Haiti.
A beef lollipop.
Beef lollipop. Oh yeah, he was stressing about his lollipops. The little misshapen. And I'm so angry.
Yeah, his story was, in Haiti, on the New Year, we could stay up past 10 o'clock and we would be fed beef patties. Like, sounds delicious. But he ended up making like a really good beef lollipop that they all loved. I mean, Tom never loves anything that much. Tom loved his. He's like,
Tom
whoa.
Tom loved it.
Hey, anybody have thoughts about that beef lollipop? Delicious. Whoa, that was amazing. Seriously, best thing. Wow.
The beef lollipop wound up in the top three. And I'm surprised because I thought that I actually thought John Scampi was going to get in the top three because, A, I mean, who doesn't love Scampi? And, B, Tom was so excited about it that after he was done eating it, he turned to the crowd like, huh, you got to get in here. This is good food. This is good food right over here.
It's like, wow. No, but they serve that at Red Lobster. Like, John is doing a lot of old things from the 80s
That's
lately.
True.
I mean, last week was pimento cheese. He was shocked that they weren't thrilled with pimento cheese. This week was Scampi.
Yeah, that's true.
John, Scampi is come good, on, though. Buddy. He's like, I've opened 20 restaurants this year, and they've all been Red Lobster Expresses inside malls.
Do those exist?
No, but they need to.
I was like, let's get serious here. Does that exist? Because that's important.
Most of the fish we eat is flash frozen anyway. People need to get the fuck over it. Red Lobster is delicious.
And according to Chef John, our favorite food blogger, if you're ordering lobster tail, you actually you should just ask for the ones from their freezer at the supermarket because everything's flash frozen and then it's thawed out in the case. So it's actually a little fresher to get it from the freezer, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I buy fish like that at Sprouts because every fish at Sprouts says swordfish previously frozen. He's like, oh, geez, if you refreeze fish, you're fucked. So you got to like hurry up and get it home and throw it in the fridge.
Why are we fucked if we refreeze fish? Is it this? Did the cell structure break down or something?
I don't know. I've never understood why, but I'm not testing that.
Yeah. I'm not. You know what? I'm not testing it either.
Yeah. I think that's a good idea.
And I'm going to go to Sprouts later. I'm going to go to Sprouts later.
I am too. Maybe we'll see each other. Oh my God. We should plan it at the same time.
Oh my God. I got to get my weekly groceries. I got to get my like cottage cheese and eggs and salmon and chicken.
Oh, gross. I'll walk behind you with fattening things. Please don't let me buy bread. Okay, don't let me buy buns because I love a white bread bun. And don't let me buy flour. Anything else, I'm good.
Yeah, I'll make sure you stay away from the cream cheese in that case. And then I'll keep away from the bread, although I'm sure my discussion of that amazing Curtis Stone focaccia did not help. And I also had some really good bread on Friday, too.
No, stop it. Oh, can I tell everybody a tortilla secret? Because I did have a breakthrough. And this is a Top Chef recap, so it's appropriate. Mm-hmm. So I love making tortillas. Love it. Yeah. I've always made my own tortillas. But when you make them yourself, they're a little harder. Like,
from
they're
scratch?
A little tougher.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I read on some rando blog to put them inside a Ziploc bag right after they're cooked, and then they all steam each other. And then when you leave them in there, they like steam after they cook, and they're so soft and delicious. Wow. So thank you, Rando Blogger.
Do you have a tortilla press?
No. Those are mostly for corn tortillas. I have a marble rolling pin. The thing is heavy as fuck. And I just slam it down and roll the crap out of it.
Do you have a tortilla? Do you have like one of those things that you put tortillas in? Like the round things that look like a dumpling steamer, but it's like a tortilla.
No.
Because maybe I'm sure that probably serves the same purpose. When you're done with the tortillas, you put them in there, you put the top on, and then they probably steam in there.
Yeah, well, I make some big-ass tortillas. I guess I can get a big-ass one of those, but I live in a little tiny place, so I don't need anything else in here. My KitchenAid mixer is already bullying me. It's like always there. It's always in my face. I can't have anything else in here. So for you poor people who need some steams, some softer tortillas, steam them, honey.
You know, it's funny. I can give you another tortilla hack right now because, as it happens, my copy of Cook's Illustrated is directly in front of me, and I was reading it the other day. And I want you to know this, Ronnie. I'm going to read this to you. Because, you know, in the front of Cook's Illustrated, they always have these little things that readers write in their little hacks, their kitchen hacks. So here's one for stovetop steamed tortillas that I just read 2 days ago. To soften and warm tortillas without using a microwave, Jeff Fair of Seattle, Washington, places a tortilla on a wire rack set over a pot of simmering water. He leaves the tortilla over the heat only briefly to ensure that it doesn't get overly moist, flipping it once or twice so that it warms through evenly. And you can do this with four at a time. So I guess it probably makes it like a nicer, it sort of moisturizes the tortilla in a way that a microwave can do it, but this way it's like a little, it doesn't make them chewy. So there. Oh. So when you want to heat up your tortillas that you have made, you can just put a wire rack over some simmering water and just let them go.
Delicious. And that's been the tortilla moment.
Sponsored by G'day USA. So speaking of limp tortillas, let's go back to these people.
I was actually, that is a good segue for Lena Dunham. Okay, because of course, cut to everyone's like, I'm making sous vide, blah, blah, blah. Like everyone's trying to get fancy. And then you cut over to Lena Dunham and she's like, oh, these ovens are so uneven. And then she tries pouring out an icebox cake and it's all gross and burnt. She's like, well, gonna have to hide that one. I was like, you just had to make an icebox cake. That's all you had to make.
I know. Well, she has two things going against her. One, as it turns out, it's like the hottest day of the year, and they're all like prepping outside the next day. And so that's not going to be good for an ice cake. But two, the other thing going against her is herself. Because you know what? The whole point with an icebox cake is you put something dry in there, and it absorbs the moisture of like the whipped cream or whatever you're going to use. And then it becomes soft and it becomes cohesive. I know this because I'm a big fan of making Ina Garten's mocha icebox cake. Have you ever made that one?
No, huh? I'm not a big cake maker.
Well, it's easy because you get what I like to do is she calls for Tate's, but those are expensive. So I just get like the tin of chocolate chip cookies from Trader Joe's, or you can get Chips Ahoy's, and you basically just do a layer of cookies and you make this special whipped cream using a mascarpone and cream and some espresso powder or whatever. And you put in a layer of the whipped cream and then more cookies, layer. You do like five layers of cookies and then all that. And it takes about 25 minutes total. And then you put it into the fridge for 12 hours. And when you slice into it, it's like a cohesive piece of cake that essentially tastes like milk and cookies in cake form. And it's awesome.
Yum.
Every time I've made it, it's like the biggest hit ever. So all this woman has to do is make a dry piece of cake. That's all she has to do. So just put it in the oven and like don't burn it, but just dry it out. It's okay because you're going to put all this moisture in it and you're going to let it sit overnight. And the fact that she let it sit overnight and the moisture didn't get into the cake, how do you do that? How do you do that?
Well, I was going to ask you if we could just jump to judging because I love when she says,
yes.
Basically, like when she presented her cake, she's like, I mean, basically, it's a wet cake. she goes, it's supposed to be a wet cake. And then she tells us, yeah, I mean, it's a cake. Bada bing, bada boom. I was like, you please tell me you're leaving this episode. And I've not been rooting for her to leave. But this was one where I'm like, I can't even root for you right now. But right before this happens at home, they're giving Silva shit about something. And they're asking him how he's doing. And he goes, Brooke's freaking out about her sous vide, whatever. And Silva goes, don't worry, Brooke. I still haven't stuffed my lollipop ball. She goes, what? It's like, am I the only person who can't understand a fucking person left in this cast today?
He's like, can't you see how stressed out I am right now? Sheldon's like, yeah, me too.
I am freaking out.
Me too, Sheldon.
I wrote down in my notes, Ben will say Silva's dad was hot. Did you write that in your notes?
I did not, actually.
Silva was telling his story about how his dad feels like, well, my father feels like, why would I struggle so hard to come here just so my son can cook? And I want to show him, look, I can also be on TV or whatever. And they showed a flashback to his dad's picture.
Look at me going off like a fool again.
Look at me, not able to stop talking and laughing so crazily.
Can't control my emotions.
So Padma's like, enjoy your day in your plug-in BMW Hybrid Supreme XL.
Tortilla.
I'm like, Jesus, make a longer name, BMW.
I know. So during the judging, before we get to like the final judging, I just want to make two comments about the food. It can fold into all of it, but basically, when Padma and Michael Voltaggio came to Casey Station, they're like, did you season this at all? And Casey's like, well, yeah, I seasoned it a lot. And like, okay, I could have used a little more salt. And so then I loved how judging, you know, Casey gets so defensive and she's like, I just can't believe that they would say it needs more salt. I mean, that's just not me. That's not me. What you got, that's not me. That's not Casey to give it.
Yeah. Even right after they told her that, she's like, they are judging so hard. I mean, one grain of salt. That's what it's coming down to. One grain of salt. I'm like, no, you served plain ass mayonnaise and crab on white bread and it had no flavor, Casey. Like, I like that you're trying to repeat just one grain of salt over and over so it'll sound ridiculous. But we all know what you mean. It's like, damn. Like,
they are judging so hard. I mean, if your crab is even over 3 days old, they will just ding you for that.
And also, Casey had said earlier in this this episode, she was talking about how she knows John and how he'll be really nice and then freak on you and he's got demons or whatever. And she goes, I can tell you this much about John. If something goes wrong, not his fault. But she's the same way. Every time something happens, she's like, one grain of salt. That's not even a real thing.
How could they say I underseasoned? That's just not me. That's not me. It is you, bitch. It is. Meanwhile, Shirley also had challenges, which is rare. But her issue is that she made her lamb. She cut her lamb too big, and it was like a little too rare. So it was difficult for people to cut through it with like plastic silverware. And this was an issue that Padma had. So when they questioned her at judging, they were like, what did you think about the size of your lamb? And she was like, oh, well, I guess I take big bites, so it was good for me. I take big bites. And then Pam was like, you expected me to put all of that lamb into my mouth? I mean, I'm not Gail Simmons.
Shirley just licked her lips really fast. I love when Padma gets mad because it's always about something like this. It's like, the size of that lamb bite. What was I supposed to do with that? Like, she said it 20 times throughout the episode. Like, well, that was really good. But the size of that lamb. Like, Padma, you had someone making a sheet cake.
But at least she didn't make me take an epic size.
Brooke is so talented, but man, some of her food just sounds so rock. I mean, so rancid to me. She made trout roe in egg yolk crepe. Like, that how many babies do you need to murder for this dish, Brooke? She's like, I like to feed it to my son, who's my family. I'm like, well, great. He just ate a million babies that never had a chance, Brooke.
I think it sounded so good. I was like, wow. And Tom said, I'm going to put it out there. It's the best breakfast dish I've ever had in my life.
She's like, whoa, Brooke. Another one with no enthusiasm. She's like, thanks. Whoa.
It occurred to me, Ronnie, you know how we're talking about our Top Chef food trip that we're gonna do, where we're gonna go to Shirley's.
Oh yeah.
And then what was the other one we're gonna go to?
Brooks.
We can also go to Kraft and go to Tom's restaurant.
Oh, that's an expensive day.
I know.
I think we should make our rich friends do that.
Okay.
Just save that up so next time we have a meeting we can say Kraft. You so suckers.
Yeah.
I like that when Brooke served her thing, a guest, they cut to one of the normal people guests going, I'm really disappointed in the egg yolk. And I was like, you are trash. Yeah. Every time they cut to a guest, I'm like, you're trash. You have a problem with egg yolk? Really?
Egg yolk is delicious.
So let's see. I just kept writing Padma angry about lamb. Padma angry. About
lamb. I mean, would you believe it? She can turn into like Luann. Would you believe it? She wanted me to have an entire piece of lamb in my mouth. A regular slob. So
the top threes are pretty obvious. They all loved Sheldon's trout in termos. And no, they no. all loved
tea.
Brooks.
Oh, yeah. The barley tea thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And they all loved Silva's. So they were like, well, Padma on the way out goes, it's not even hard to decide who's going to go home. It's harder to decide who's going to win. And I was like, oh, poor Lena Dunham.
Yeah, poor Lena Dunham with her faulty icebox cake. The foolproof. Literally, I think that recipe is in Ina Garten's book, Foolproof. You know what it is? Because she talked about she was trying to get coffee liqueur to go into the cake. And what probably happened is it probably absorbed the coffee liqueur and then didn't end up taking the, I don't know. I was gonna say it didn't take in the other stuff, but I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, Tom, they said it wasn't gross. Tom was like, you know, the cake, it wasn't offensive. I mean, that could be a group challenge, restaurant wars, whatever. Someone has to make a dessert, whatever. I'm not gonna be mad at the cake, but I mean, it's a sheet cake. It's a nice box cake. You know, it's a cake.
It's a no bake cake. It's a cake. It's a no bake cake.
So those are the top three, and the winner is Sheldon.
Was it Sheldon? I thought it was Silva.
I mean, Silva. I just wrote S. Sorry.
And Silva's like, wow.
He's like, whoa, I'm jumping up and down right now. This is unbelievable.
I can't hold back the tears.
I'm crying, right? Am I crying right now? My father will be so disappointed at these sobs.
My facial features are getting closer together, making me cuter and cuter.
So this was a all-girl bottom, which I hate when that happens, but they were just being shitty to Shirley. Padma got her way with her lamb. They're like, okay, Padma, we'll put fucking Shirley there for making a big bite. She's like, thank you. That's all I ever wanted. So they put Shirley in the bottom and Casey in the bottom. One grain of salt and Emily. And
it's pretty obvious how it was going to go.
Yes, and it did. Poor Lena, she's like, well, you know, I just wanted to do something good, and I sure didn't want to let my dead grandpa down. I was like, that is not going to help you.
Yeah.
And so they were out. But let's see what else happened here. She did leave with a good attitude. I like that Tom ended it with, well, we created great memories today, and this was a really great time, and here's another great memory for me about to happen. Lena Dunham, please pack your knives and go. And she's like, well, you know, this is hard to swallow, but at least no one said it was shit on a plate. And you know what? I've never had regrets. I'm a very positive person. So I'm just going to go on and be positive. This will not devastate me for life.
Then Padma comes in and is like, let me just reiterate, your childhood did not live up to our expectations. We did not appreciate it.
You failed, Uncle Gilbert. Too big of a bite. Your childhood was literally not even showing up on a spoon. Please leave.
We felt your childhood was dry and boring and unremarkable, and your grandfather would be very sad. There, did that help?
Yes, I feel terrible now.
So are you ready to move on, Ben?
Yeah, let's switch gears. Let's head over from Charleston to Atlanta.
These are really the craziest shows to recap back to back.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's a really odd mixture.
Yeah, I feel like we're pulling in two different audiences.
Yeah, I feel like we need to go outside and do some jumping jacks. We're going from like, well, what do you think about the composition of a frozen trout?
Yeah, the focaccia at Curtis Stone's restaurant to girl.
To Porsche.
Yeah. But I'm not ashamed of being in anger management.
They're like, you literally wouldn't even admit it like 2 days ago.
Yeah. So Real Housewives of Atlanta opens up with Portia talking to her counselor at anger management. And she's basically deliberating whether or not she's going to go on Phaedra's glamping trip that she's organizing.
She was like,
listen, anger management guy, I was tested.
And then they show the clip of her fighting with the girls at that lunch. And she goes, Kenya goes, are you on medication? And she goes, I ain't on no meditation. And I was like, I love fucking Portia.
I know, I really do. I hear that she is doing a good job on Celebrity Apprentice, which I'm not watching. But I hear that she's, from what I've been told by our friends, is that she messes up every challenge, but then she gets into the boardroom and she talks her way out of every situation. Which is sort of what Kenya did on her season.
Oh, no. Kenya didn't talk herself out of anything for very long because she got on Vivica Fox's Twitter when Vivica Fox left her phone on a couch. Yes. Kenya stole it and started tweeting like, this menopause is difficult.
That was amazing. I forgot about that. That was so great. Oh, Kenya and Vivica A. Fox.
She could not even lie when Donald Trump was like, well, who does that? Like, did you do that? She's like, nope. No, I didn't.
It's kind of funny to think about, like, you know, because Donald Trump, I think, said that Kenya was the worst apprentice, like, contestant he's ever seen. That's like the president. It's kind of funny if you think about it. That,
yes, and he didn't even say contestant. He said, you're the worst person who's ever... It was terrible what he said. He was like, you're the worst person to ever walk through these doors.
Oh, my goodness. I on The Apprentice, Donald Trump was really great. I really wish he had just sort of kept it right there, stayed in that lane, and not, you know, taken over the country.
Well, you know what, America? I know, like, half of America is freaking out right now, but all we really need are better challenges.
Go on. I'm gonna reserve judgment until I understand where this is going.
No, that was it. Like, we need better team challenges to know, you know, how he's doing.
Yeah, see, here's the thing. I would prefer it if Donald Trump spent less time doing controversial executive orders that threaten to tear apart the fabric of the nation, and instead have members of Congress make silly videos for, like, Febreze.
Yes. You know? Exactly. That we can all understand.
And then, like, the ghost of Joan Rivers comes out to help judge it. And by the way, yeah, where has Carolyn. George, where has George been during George? All this?
Was it Carolyn or Caroline?
Carolyn
and George, the original judges, bring them back.
Where has George been during all this madness, by the way? Where is George?
How is George not our vice president right now?
That would actually make me
George
feel better.
George has worked a long, hard time. He needs to be the new Cheney. Like, hey, listen here, Putin, you fucked up. And that's it.
I would feel so much better if George were the vice president.
Me too.
It would fix, honestly, everything. Because every time something goes away I wouldn't want, I'd be like, you know what? George has got it.
You guys, I can't be the only person feeling positive about the next 4 years right now. I'm so excited now. I'm like, George! Like, it's really going to happen. Someone tweet Donald Trump and ask him about George. I feel like it's an idea away from happening. It's like a little light bulb going off in the head away from happening.
It would really fix all these issues.
It would.
That, and again, doing some sort of comic video for Febreze or something like that.
Like, you want an aid package from us? I want to see the best commercial for an ice cream truck of a flavor that you know, a bunch of B-list, C-list, and D-list celebrities made up.
There's Team Senate and Team House of Reps, and they each have to take over Pizza Parlor in New York and get donations.
Yes, every time you bring a bill to the floor, you have to have, like, a presentation, and you have to pitch it with, like, celebrities and costume pieces.
Yeah, that, you know what, this honestly already makes me feel so much better. Oh, and then there should be one thing where you have to make a mobile experience, like the House of Reps and then Senate. They each get a little trailer that they have to renovate and make it into experience to sell, like, Samsung TVs.
Yes, whoever can mix the best scent wins.
Paul Ryan's like, what does this actually have to do with running the country? I don't know, but it's fun.
I mean, think about how much effect, like, someone like Paula Poundstone could bring. You know, like, these people could change the world. You can get the guy from, like, Poison. He could be up there pitching shit and just changing the world, you know?
See, yeah, I feel like if we had Apprentice Donald Trump and he had his conference room and he had members of Congress in that conference room and he was sitting there grilling them on TV, holding them accountable for things they were doing, I think that's actually something the entire country would get behind.
But it would always be the wrong thing. He'd be like, that's true. Well, I liked your bill, but you didn't bring in as much money as the Goldman Sachs guy. You're out. You're fired.
Yeah. It would be something weird, like the time he fired Khloe Kardashian because she had a DUI on her record.
Oh, my God. Yes. She's like, that is so not fair. It's like, I don't care.
I feel like that's something that people would be excited about. Like, don't mess with the laws. Just you know, clean out the annoying politicians who have just been there for years and are not there to help the country. They're there to help their careers. Pit them against each other. Put them in the boardroom. Fight it out. Fire someone and then get the new
Every
session.
Every week there could be you know, some kind of team challenge and just off them one by one.
Yeah, and then you'll have a leaner, meaner, better Congress, and let them take care of all the legislating. But don't
hell yeah, look at some of the winners of that show. I mean, who wouldn't kill? I mean, she's dead now, but who wouldn't kill to see Joan Rivers take over for Nancy Pelosi?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah. Marley Matlin. Put Marley Matlin somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my God, we don't, just fixed America.
Yeah, but don't. I would not put Brett What's His Face from Poison. I felt like he was not deserving.
Well, he should be in charge of health services because you know he wants everybody to get abortions. <It's>
like, that's true.
He would up the funding for Planned Parenthoods and people's backyards.
Yeah, leave no child behind in terms of not having a bandana.
Yeah, like every disease can't be fixed at the same time, but maybe hepatitis C.
We got to work on it.
I don't even know how we can continue this. We just fixed the fucking country. Thank you for listening to Watch What Crappin'.
We really did. So anyway, while Portia is talking to her counselor about anger management, Phaedra and Kenya are shopping. They're in a camping shop. And they're looking for supplies. And the question is Portia going to come on the glamping trip? And that's what it's cross-cutting between the two. Portia's wondering this herself. They're wondering if she's coming. And, you know, Kenya is doing her usual thing, talking about how Portia's so unpredictable. And Phaedra sort of defends Portia, so that's notable.
She's defending her, but Phaedra's doing that thing she always does when she doesn't want to have a discussion. She's just saying random things that don't make any sense. She's like, oh, girl, you're giving us some camel toe. And then it's like, okay, confrontation. And she's like, how about if we go naked?
Naked and afraid, girl.
It's like, okay.
So good. So meanwhile, back at Anger Management. It's Porsche's team name, Menger. Menger Management.
It's the Menger Management. I didn't do no meditations.
Jesus and the Menger.
Back over in the office. This is why crazy people should not go to therapy. Because the therapists always just take their side, even though it's probably the wrong side, and they don't really understand the whole situation. Because yeah. Portia's over there, and she's like,
well, I went to lunch, and then before you know it, a 4-foot lady came up to me and got her finger in my face, and no, no, no.
And he's like, well, now that sounds like you're being bullied. I'm like, please don't put that into her head, because now she thinks she's being bullied.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. And Candy was actually just responding to Portia, because Candy was trying to clear the air. Candy was trying to press the reset button and ask sincerely, how is your anger management going? And then, but Portia was going off. And then when she went off on Candy, Candy was like, oh, see, nah, Portia, can't be going off on me like that.
At one point in this episode, Candy went,
oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I wrote it down. Don't you worry. Don't you worry. We'll get to that. But yeah,
also, why isn't this anger management guy? I mean, Portia just said,
and then this 4-foot tall lady came over.
And why didn't he say, now see, that's not a nice way to be talking about people. Instead, he's like, it sounds like you're being bullied. And I was like, this is not going to end well, especially when the cut behind him says 911.
Yeah. He's like, you have to think about your legacy. So speaking
about, think about your legacy. She's like, he goes, you need to write down some positive intentions. What did he say? Something like that. And she's like, so she can concentrate on whatever. And she's like,
yeah, I did that for Kenya, but I didn't do that for everybody else. And I wasn't prepared for that.
But your legacy.
Yeah, legacy.
Speaking of mediators of the world, Cynthia Bailey surprisingly shows up at a basketball court where Matt is playing basketball, and she wants to talk to him. I'm thinking, oh God, what are you doing talking to this guy? You're inserting yourself into the situation, and also he's crazy, she's crazy. Just steer clear, dear, steer clear.
I know. Cynthia doesn't even know how to shoot a season if she doesn't have a man to be disappointed in.
Yeah. So she sits down with Matt and she's like, well, I just want to know what's going on, where you think about things. I want to get your perspective so I can go back to Kenya and talk about it. So Matt's like,
she brought a notepad in typical Cynthia style. And he goes, oh, you're going to need a bigger notepad. Put all that.
And so then she's like, well, I don't want all the details, just the bullet points. I'm like, oh, well, great mediating, huh? Not don't want all the details. So he's like, I just want respect and communication, you know. He's like, we don't see eye to eye. We don't speak the same language. I'm like, yeah. So, for instance, like, her love language is roses and chocolates, and your love language is breaking glass.
Yeah, pretty much. Also, if you say we need communication because we can never see eye to eye and speak different languages, I think that means it's time to just date.
I think it's called, you know, time to break up. That's what that means.
Yeah, some things just don't need fixing. They don't fit together properly, you know?
Yeah.
And he, of course, went into excuse mode. He's like, when I feel like she doesn't understand me, that's when things start getting broken. That's why we stop breaking things. I'm like, there's no we breaking things.
It's like he suddenly becomes Lisa Simpson in that episode of The Simpsons from decades ago, where Lisa Simpson starts like doing like propellers with her arms. She's like, well, I'm gonna start walking, and if you get in my way, you're gonna get punched. And that's basically what happens with him. He gets angry, his arm just starts swinging, and if he hits a window, well, it's the window's fault.
And then, of course, Cynthia is going to get punched in the face metaphorically by this whole thing with this part, because she's like, now, you know, this woman has her own issues, and, you know, she can be a bit much, but if she's the drama queen, you the drama king. And I knew that was just going to come back to kick her in the ass later. And I don't even know why she needed to bring that up with Kenya later. Like, you don't need to tell her that part.
Yeah, well, she was going to see it anyway. I'm sure Matt loved it. Matt's like, yeah, I am a king. It's like, no.
Yeah, even your friends say that stuff about you. Even your friends say it.
That was coming later.
Yeah. So then...
Yeah, sometimes it's okay to just dump a guy. Okay, guys?
Mm-hmm. So then, meanwhile, elsewhere in Atlanta, it's nighttime, and Candy has... she has arranged a surprise white party for Shamia's engagement. And so Candy shows up and Carmen's there and people are showing up one at a time. And I sort of chuckled that Cynthia Bailey showed up to the white party wearing olive. And Candy's like, see, no, Cynthia, I can't do it anymore. Riley, Cynthia, Cynthia. I have to do Riley first. But she's like, I love, she's like, you didn't get the memo. And Cynthia's like, no, I got the memo. And then it cuts to a fish and the fish shakes its head. Did you notice that?
No. A real fish?
They cut to a fish in a fish tank, and then it gave, like, donk donk music. It went donk donk, and the fish shook its head. Like, girl, even I'm wearing white, and I'm a fish.
Well, no one from the cast showed up in white. And Sheree made it worse, because she's like, she showed up in some other color. Salmon. And Candy's like, I guess you didn't get the white memo. And she goes... She's like, girl, you sent us that last night. I need time to get my white out the attic, girl. She made it worse because in her diary room session talking about this party, she is in white. Yeah. It's like, you had a white outfit, you just wouldn't wear it.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, Sheree does not have internet access in Chateau Sheree yet, so she's on a little bit of a delay in terms of getting emails. She's still on her old Motorola Razr phone.
I didn't find out until this morning when I was pooping at Starbucks.
You got AOL? You got AOL? yeah, Marlo showed up also.
America is online at Starbucks. Waiting to poop.
You know what I say? I'm a prodigy. That's why I use prodigy.
Shamia shows up looking gorge, of course. And
she looked great. She looked like I want to dance with somebody, Whitney Houston.
Yeah, she looked really pretty. And everybody, of course, the conversation immediately turns to, where's Portia? And Shamia starts crying when she finds out she's not coming. She's like,
Well, this Sheree's is where like, Candy.
Now, you know that Portia loves you. And maybe she just didn't want drama on your day. And then Sheree tells us, this is not the right time to bring up, you know, everything that Portia let Phaedra say about Shamia. Which she does in like 5 minutes.
Yeah. This is also when... Because when they're talking about Portia not being there, this is when Candy gets really sing-songy. She's like, well, if Portia feels like she doesn't want to come to a best friend's engagement party because of me, okay.
So let's see.
So they
go upstairs. Yeah. And
on the heels of Sheree being like, this isn't a good time to bring things up. They go upstairs and Sheree's like, well, speaking of Phaedra, her exact words was, Shamia fucked everybody's husband in Atlanta.
I love Shamia's reaction because she's like, well, if that was true, I would have fucked Apollo. Because trust me, the chance was there. And if she wants to talk about word on the street, I can tell her about word on the street. Which I still love that it's word on the street.
I know. And then, and then Shrey goes,
and then they go, what is the word on the street?
And she's like, yeah. Someone will make a good gif of that.
It's like full on noises along with it.
Yeah. So now Shamia gets mad because, you know, I mean, Shrey is the biggest gossip of the season. And basically Shrey tells Shamia that when Phaedra said these rumors, Portia was right there and said nothing. And we saw video evidence of that about 12 more times during this episode that Portia just sat there quietly. And Shamia got mad, rightfully so, because when Shamia, Shrey, and Portia were talking about Phaedra in another scene earlier this season, Portia got all feisty and started defending Phaedra. So Shamia's feeling like, wow, Portia's going to stand up for Phaedra, but she's not going to stand up for me. And we're lifelong friends of a decade.
Lord. Typical housewives fight.
I know.
But I like that Candy was like, look, I don't want to discuss Phaedra. Girl, that right now they're the same thing to me.
Yeah, I love that.
I always mess up their names too.
Yeah, me too. See? Now, Phaedra, Portia.
So Sheree's got Shamia pissed now, and Shamia's like, well, all right, I'm going to hit her. And they're like, whoa, don't hit her. Don't hit her. It's like, hit her up. Like, yeah. Sheree's like, don't hit her, girl. Do not hit her, girl. We've got enough of that. So Kenya brings her dogs to shit in Cynthia's yard at her new lake house. And Cynthia's inside things. Pretending she understands a tape measure. She's like, I'm going to measure a cabinet right now. Why?
Yeah, why? I know. That's what I did. Cynthia's measuring things. She's just waiting for her new kitchen island to arrive so she'll feel more comfortable. She's like, well, got nothing to stand around, so I guess I'll just measure things and see the relative length of things next to the other things.
Isn't it crazy how this can roll up, but it can also stay straight? I mean, these are what an invention.
Ooh, the most exciting thing is when I press that button, it rolls up real fast.
So Kenya's dogs are trying to find somewhere to poop. And Cynthia's like, excuse me. And Kenny goes, I didn't see a sign.
They go down to the dock. And by the way, I love when they get down to the dock by the lake. Kenya's like, yes, dock.
Don't twirl into the lake, girl.
Yeah. That was by the way, there's something about that lake that has me nervous. I feel like there's some brain-eating amoeba in there.
Yeah, that is some neon green lake water.
Like, there's some scary monster, like a weird crocodile that's going to come out and go after Betty White or something in there.
Yes, that is, it's like toxic waste. And did you notice that there were docks but no boats? Like, there's something creepy going on in this place.
Yeah.
So, Kenya basically is like, so you talked to Matt, how'd that go? And Kenya, being delusional ass Kenya, just thinks that everybody's going to go yell at Matt for her since he won't pick up the phone when she's calling right now, which is not really how that works, Kenya.
So Cynthia
tells the story and she's like, well, basically, I was saying that's not good that you act like that. And I get that she's dramatic too, but you guys need to find a way to communicate. And she's like, you think so it's my fault now? She's like, no, it's just that he thinks that his reactions are based on your actions. And Kenny goes, does that sound like a sane person? Because that's some straight up bullshit. I'm like, well, then actually, break up with actions, him. Actions like literally do have reactions.
Yeah, exactly. But also,
they teach that in school.
But also, you just called him insane, so this should be the end of the discussion. You're just not going to date him anymore, and you're going to move on. So there, that should be it. But instead,
you're also giving him a defense in court if he ever kills you.
Yeah,
it's like we have her saying he's insane 20 damn times, not guilty.
So then, Cynthia's like, well, I said, like, you can be dramatic, but then so can he. And she's like, what? She's like, I am sick. I'm tired of people blaming their bad behavior on me. I'm like, well, if people keep blaming their bad behavior on you, maybe you should realize that you're the common denominator here. And it's not about blaming the victim, but maybe think about what you're contributing to these situations that happen over and over and over and over and over again, Kenya.
Yeah, when you're constantly trying to trigger people and make them lose their shit on purpose, that's called being an accessory. I watched Law and Order, and you would go to jail for that if anybody committed a crime based on shit that you did.
Yeah. So Kenya really resents being called dramatic, and she doesn't even let Cynthia finish. And Cynthia's like, no, I was defending you. And Kenya's like, no, you know, that's not true. That's not true, Cynthia. I hate that. Why would you call me dramatic? As she gets up and storms off. I don't know what. Yeah. I don't know where this dramatic thing came from. What a strange concept.
I know. Cynthia's like, she's mad because I said she was a drama queen, and now she's being dramatic. Point made.
Yeah. And she's like,
I just wrote
do
at the
that
end of
to
this-
me.
I wrote at the end of the scene, your fault. And then under that, I wrote, the tits on this show are really out of control right
and
now.
And asses, too.
Oh, my God. And I usually don't even look at those things. I don't care. But, man, the boobs on this show are just insane. It's like a weird new thing. They all look weird and, like, plastic. Like, they don't even move. It's awkward. It's awkward to look at one after the other. I'm like, you all, you're going to be like the real scoliosis housewives soon. You're all going to be all bent over in pain.
Yeah, it's going to hurt.
So Shamia and Portia.
Yeah, Shamia and Portia. Portia's got like a sort of like a 1997 wig going on, which I wasn't mad at.
Yeah. They basically just have a discussion. You know, Shamia's hurt and upset that she didn't come, and Portia refuses to apologize. She's basically like, well, I'm sorry I hurt your feelings, but I just didn't go because Candy's mean, and that's it. But then Shamia, you know, confronts her about all this stuff that she's hearing, and she's like,
well, I don't remember that. Yeah, I don't remember anybody ever saying that stuff.
She pulls a full Dorit.
Yeah, she does, but she at least said,
I don't remember that specifics, but you both sling in mud, and you slung it first.
Which I like that she at least stopped it there, because Shamia did come in swinging, really, at everybody, trying to get a spot.
Yeah.
And Portia's like, I love you, but let's not pretend you're all innocent here, which is basically the scene we just saw before this.
Yeah. Well, and also the other thing is that I think the reason why Portia chimed in about Phaedra is that Portia is feeling some sort of way about Candy, and so Phaedra has been her ally in that. And so when Shamia goes after Phaedra, for her, it's like, you know, I guess she feels more inspired to stand up for it. But either way, I did love that when Shamia warned Portia about Phaedra, saying, like, watch out for your new friend. They show a flashback of Phaedra being shady to Portia, and Phaedra's like, Portia's got a very small head. Small heads mean small brains.
And then Portia goes,
well, I don't know what to say about this glamping trip, because last time I was around these girls, it was totally toxtics.
So speaking of the glamping, it's now glamping day, and Kenya and Sheree are putting out rival pre-glamping spreads. So Kenya puts out like a very lovely spread in her kitchen, and then they go to Sheree, and she's got like a fold-out carpenter's table or something like that with some stuff from Albertsons. It's still in the plastic on top. It was so janky.
And Kenya said, I entertain with class, unlike Chateau Sheree Shane, or Chateau Shane doing shit over there.
Yeah.
You know, she outclasses her by putting some vegetables from Ralph's out and then a tray of cut-up Subway sandwiches. But, I mean, compared to Sheree's spread, it was a lot better.
It was. She also had better-looking brownies. But then, so at Sheree's, Marlo shows up because Sheree invited Marlo. Marlo is dressed in this, like, ridiculous camouflage bodysuit. It's, like, head-to-toe with a big, heavy Naomi Campbell wig. And she just sort of looked...
A
absolutely
purse
ridiculous.
That matches the cuffs on her outfit.
It looked absolutely
hey
ridiculous.
Girl,
yeah.
What's up, girl? We're going glamping because you know I got things to say about glamping.
I'm like, okay, Jolly Green. Have a seat.
Yeah. And then meanwhile, at Kenya, Cynthia shows up there.
Sheree goes. Of course I invited Marlo. She's the epitome of glamp. I'm like, oh, the epitome of glamp. It's like you look at Marlo and you're like, yep, there's a lady with nice clothes who shits in the woods.
She's neither glamorous nor campy, so I don't understand how she's the epitome of glamp, but okay. So so then over at Cynthia's house, Kenya's house, Cynthia shows up, and they like clear the air from their little dust up, And then Kenya's, you know, Kenya's doing this, holding all this stuff over Cynthia because she's saying how the way Cynthia had downgraded their relationship last year when Nini came back into the picture. And so Kenya's like, I just hope that moving forward, we don't have to have this conversation again. I'm like, bitch, you're the one who brings it up. You're the one who's taking it to that place. Over.
Yeah. So basically all the girls come over. It's a weird split because now they're going to all be mad about who's at whose house before the trip.
Yeah.
So Phaedra goes over to Sheree's house. No, and Kenya's. Portia's all pissed off because Portia was at Sheree's house.
Yeah.
And Phaedra went to the other house, to Kenya's house. And she's like, where's Frack? Are they Frack and Whack now?
Yeah. I love Portia. What I even loved more was that when Portia showed up with her sister Lauren, and and she's like, she wants to go inside, and Shreya's like, no, like, you can't go inside till it's ready. And so Portia's like, girl, are we having a housewarming outside? So then Portia,
I don't want you to choke on dust when you're trying to eat my muffins from the grocery store.
So then Portia confronts Sheree about all her gossiping, and Sheree's defense is like, girl, I can't help myself. She's like, yeah, I have like, to.
You know me.
And then Sheree, you know, Sheree says, well, you know, because you said this behind this back, so I thought you should know this. Or it was some excuse.
She's like, I will not stop speaking because these women need to learn not to speak behind each other's back.
I'm like, oh, okay. So you're doing this for everybody else. What a giver.
You're talking behind everyone's back so people learn to stop talking behind everyone's back. Okay, I got it, Sheree.
That is so Real Housewives.
Yeah. So let's see. So Candy and Hazel, we didn't talk about Hazel, but Hazel's like the new friend of who showed up at the engagement party. Candy and Hazel show up at Kenya's. Now this is when Portia is getting mad that Frack, she's lost her Frack, the Frack to her Frick. So then they all pile into this bus eventually that's going to take them to the glamping site. And while they're all there, Marlo starts just yapping. She's talking about, like, I guess at the campfire she's going to have an Ask Marlo moment. Like, you can ask me.
I think she thought it was the camp from last week. I think she thought they were on their way to that, like, children who need water camp.
She was like, you know, she was going on. She's like, you can ask about men. You can ask about fashion. You can ask me this and that. And Hazel just turns to Kenya and is like, why are we asking her? And so Marlo, so then, you know, of course, Kenya repeats that directly. Marlo's like,
because I have fashion sense. Why wouldn't you?
And she's like, oh, okay. I was just asking why. I just didn't, you know, I don't know you. And she goes,
just like if it was a good skin camp, then maybe I would ask you because you have a lovely complexion.
Hazel's like, thank you.
I'm like, Marlo, don't say that you're fashion forward when you are wearing your Naomi wig. You're dressed in like a Destiny's Child Survivor pantsuit. And then you're wearing like a King Tut necklace, okay? That's not, like, you're just like a hodgepodge of non-glamping friendly things happening right now.
Oh, Marlo. So I really like that this new girl, Hazel, she's setting her sights appropriately because she's not going to come on the show and immediately try and take down Kenya. You know, she's like, I'll take down Marlo first.
Yeah. Low-hanging fruit, which is ironically the tallest thing there.
Yes, because you need as many takedowns as you can to get a spot. So it's like, take out the small ones first, you know. Eventually, one of the other ones will do something legit obnoxious that you can go after them for.
Yeah, exactly.
So Kenya is furious, for whatever reason, that Portia has brought her sister, who Lauren is like the
sweetest,
slightly more talkative Mal. I mean, she doesn't do anything. I don't know why anybody would mind her being there. She's basically just like rolls her eyes or whatever. But Kenya's really mad. She's like, oh, what? You need an emotional support dog? Well, I don't appreciate it. You know, she's going off for no reason, already trying to make Portia lose her shit. And poor Portia is not going to be able to keep it in. You can already tell. Because she's like,
well, I'm in anger management, and I brought a doctor's note. It says, please stop bullying Portia. Here is her sister, who deserves to be on this trip because bullies.
And Kenya's like, I do not appreciate that. You know, Kenya's already making this into a huge deal. And I love Kenya irrational anger because she just looks dumber and dumber. And she's been coming off way too good this season, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. They were just like, Portia's trying to just, you know, explain her anger management, and they are coming at her so hard. And I felt bad for Portia because she's just trying to explain her side. And even Candy, you know, we've always been defending Candy, that Candy only reacts when someone comes for her. But even in this case, you know, Portia was like, she's like, I felt like I was being condescended to him. And Candy's like, see, nah, that word, don't use it. I was like, Candy, come on now. She's allowed to say she felt condescended to because Kenya was condescending to her.
Yeah. Well, they all start giving her shit about her anger management and blah, blah, blah. And then Kenya almost loses it, Portia almost loses it because Kenya's like, well, that's some bullshit. And she goes, stop using the word attack. And Portia's like,
well, you sound angry.
She goes, you would know.
Yeah, I do know. And I see it in you.
And I was like, oh, good. Burn her. Yeah. Throw her into the fire.
Yeah. And that was basically, like, the cliffhanger. Like, will Portia explode when they go glamping? Who knows?
I don't think she'll even have a chance because Marlo and Hazel, they've got all these noobs lining up now.
Yeah, they really loaded up this camping trip. There's, like, so many people on the trip. I mean, where's Bob Whitfield? I'm surprised he wasn't driving the bus.
Oh, he might show up. You never know with this show.
Yeah, that's true. So, there we go. Wrap her up, we babe. Did it. So everyone, we did it. Remember to follow us on social media. Check us out on Patreon. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Come on our Facebook page. You know where to find us. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back tomorrow to talk Vanderpump Rules. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everybody.